Hello and welcome there to another episode of the Cliff Notes podcast, where we ask a leader and find their way through manufacturing and product cycles. Today I've been joined by Stephen Harrison, Director of Asset Handling Limited, where they improve efficiency and profit through exceptional machinery monitoring to prevent downtime and machinery failing. I'm Tristan Bailey, host of the show and agency director at Holding Bay. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
It's great. It's great to catch up, and a mutual friend put us in contact, and we've been having some good conversations offline. So I thought it would be good to bring you on the show and get people into this world of asset monitoring. And what could you tell us about how did you get into this space, or what gives us a bit of framing for this?
Right. So initially, I worked as a consultant for lots of large companies over the years, sort of as a contractor and as an external consultant. And I saw a lot of things that these organizations were doing or trying to do. And I also saw some of the issues that they were having, you know, with internal sign-off and funding and committing to these sorts of projects. And through some of those jobs, through some of those consultancies, I met with lots of people, built up a big network of people. And through that network, I started to get together a group of people who all had a common interest. And we all thought that a lot of the stuff that we'd been doing for a lot of these big organizations, we thought we could actually do it much better ourselves. So we decided to form a company to actually deliver it. And one of the guys that was involved in it, he's no longer involved in it, unfortunately. But at the time, he came from a facilities management background, and he'd spotted this sort of opportunity whereby instead of facilities management companies typically put lots and lots of people in to look after equipment and monitoring that equipment and testing that equipment and checking the equipment and refurbishing and replacing the equipment. And he thought that a lot of the time, a lot of the checks that they were doing was on equipment that was working perfectly fine. So they were effectively 80%, 90% of their time was completely and utterly wasted because they were checking things that were already okay. So he thought, what could we do? What can we bring innovation to and technology to in order to better utilize that workforce and maybe, you know, provide a reduction in staff numbers, you know, to the end client? So it becomes a win-win situation, you know, if they can renegotiate the contract. So what we looked at is we looked at what was available out on the market, and there didn't seem to be anything out there that was looking specifically at monitoring assets, condition monitoring. And what we mean by condition-based monitoring is looking at an asset. Say, typical example is something that rotates, you know, so that it moves. So it could be a pump, or it could be a motor, or it could be a fan, or it could be an air conditioning unit, anything with moving parts. It could even be on a production line, a mixer, or a, you know, any sort of machinery that's running. And basically, those rotating equipment, if you monitor the vibration and the temperature, and you listen to the acoustics, and you look at the power that a device is using, through monitoring all of those things, you can determine whether an asset is behaving normally or there's an issue with that asset. So that's where we got into the condition-based monitoring, to look at remotely monitoring something and raising an alarm when something goes wrong. And so that's how we sort of got into it, you know, 10, 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm. You sort of covered it there, but what are we talking in terms of assets? I mean, are we talking about sort of production line or drills, machinery, turning equipment? Or are we talking about sort of, I don't know, air conditioning, water pumps, electricity meters? What parts of the process are you looking at?
Effectively, it's any of those and all of those. Anything that moves, anything that is physically moving, you know, we can monitor. So you can even go down to monitoring things like flow rates. So the flow of liquids, you know, the pressure of liquids. You can monitor the airflow. So if you're looking at, say, one example that we've got at the moment is we're looking at, you know, pubs and clubs and on offices, especially in a COVID environment, where we're looking at the amount of air exchange that's going on within the building. So air extraction, you know, to show that the air is being changed, you know, on a regular basis. And if that starts to deteriorate, then there could be an impact on the environment and the health and welfare of the people that are actually in that environment. So it's literally anything that moves we can monitor, apart from humans, of course.
That makes sense. Yeah. But the monitoring is related to humans in that sense of these alerts, or the monitoring is to get someone to what, to replace this, to fix it, that there's an emergency. Where are these alerts that you mentioned fitting in.
Yeah. So basically, we're monitoring a piece of equipment. It starts to behave abnormally. Now, in some cases, it may be that that's correct because somebody's actually gone and switched it off or somebody's turned it up. And so it's behaving differently than it has been doing for, you know, a number of hours. So there's a change in it. And in which case, then an alarm may be raised and it gets raised to an individual or a group. And that can be through dashboards. It can be through text messages. It can be through emails. It can actually be through audible alarms, you know, actually within the environment itself. But ultimately, if an asset fails or is failing, somebody physically has to go and look at that. So we just provide the mechanism and the facility to identify and alert people to these. You still physically need the people to actually go and do it. But where it targets it a bit better is if you've got some engineers, you're sending the engineers to where there's a problem rather than your engineers just wandering around looking for problems. And a lot of that time is wasted because they're looking at things that are working normally. You know, it's a bit like an insurance policy. So your insurance kicks in when there's an issue. But most of the time it's sitting there, you know, perfectly happily unused. So it's the same with the condition monitoring. You know, we look at, you need an engineer to go and fix it and acknowledge that alarm. If they've caused the alarm, i.e. they've switched something off or they've taken something away to be repaired or replaced, then obviously that alarm just gets acknowledged and forgotten about because it's a false alarm. But what we're looking for is the real alarms, you know, the real issue. And also not just alarms because something is behaving really abnormally. We can also show the degradation of an asset, i.e. it's worse than it was 3 months ago and it's worse than it was 6 months ago. And this feeds into your scheduled maintenance. So again, our service offering, as well as the condition monitoring, we have a system that does all of your scheduled maintenance, your reactive maintenance, all the job logs, everything, or it can feed into your existing system to trigger those things. So if there's an asset that starts to degrade and you've got a service window coming up in 3 months' time, you know, we suggest that this asset gets added into that service window. So it gets serviced. It's then running more optimally again. You reset all its alarms and everything, and then you're back to normal operation. But the idea is to preserve uptime. So productivity and a production line, for example, you don't want any downtime. If one component fails in a particular run, it can affect the whole production line and you can lose production. You can lose revenue from that whilst that's being fixed. So it's all around trying to keep everything going and keep everything going optimally.
Mm-hmm. So where are we going with this? I mean, where's this fitting if I'm looking to work with something? Is this replacing my guys walking around the floor or out on site and checking things and checking, sort of taking things apart, having a look at it, seeing how it's working, seeing where the wear is? Or is it to support this? I mean, where does it fit in line with doing maintenance?
Yeah, it sort of fits in between the two because there will be certain things that you will still want to check on a regular basis because monitoring, you know, won't actually impact on the, you know, it will only show what's happening to an asset and whether there's degradation and whether something's going wrong with an asset. We're never going to get away from the catastrophic failure where somebody runs into a pump with a forklift truck, you know, and bashes the thing and damages it, you know, which causes an instant failure. What we're looking at doing is, say, if you've got, you know, a factory and you've got 50 engineers all going round, you may be able to reduce that number of engineers down because you can target them better, or you may be able to put some of them on call so that they're not actually there all of the time and they can just be on a call-off basis, you know, in order to go and fix issues. The other thing around that as well is when we raise an alarm, because we employ machine learning around the assets, what we can also do is at that time when the alarm gets raised, it can also say potentially what's actually wrong with the device or the asset. So it could be a pump and it could say that the bearings are wearing or the shaft is out of alignment to the gearbox, for example. And it can actually tell you that from the readings that it's getting. So the engineer can actually turn up with a bit of knowledge about what's actually going wrong with that asset. So before he sets off, he may put some equipment in the van or, you know, pick up the correct tools in order to be able to fix the problem that's happening.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes sense. So in the demo you were showing me before, there's definitely a increased utility when you're using a lot of the same parts or a lot of the same pumps or equipment so that you're using your tools to monitor that over time. So the actual wear and tear and the actual lifetime use of those assets in the field rather than just taking the manufacturer's specification. Is that's how it's you're improving it, yeah?
Exactly. Yeah. We feed in what the manager's recommended, you know, the recommended readings, you know, what sort of temperature range should it be operating at? What sort of vibration? What sort of power usage should it be using? So we take all of that into account and bring that all into the system as well, so we can monitor against that. But also, you're quite right. If you've got, say, a factory with lots of the same sorts of equipment, you can monitor them all. And the monitoring of one piece of equipment can actually feed into another piece of equipment as well, because you can compare, you know, equipment that's the same, and you can see how well they're operating versus the others. Also, because we monitor for lots of clients, we can agnostically use that data, you know, that we've gained from other clients to help inform your particular equipment and assets, because we can utilize that data to identify common faults and common problems, you know, by the readings, and build more and more of a database of the condition of these assets. So if we start off in a place with brand new assets, we need to start off by either building models that should show normal operation that we can compare to, or we get the devices, we get the sensors put onto the assets, and we have a period of learning to learn what normal operation is, so that we've got something to compare it to. So there's a number of different approaches and a number of different ways that we can deal with this condition monitoring. And to be honest, it's sort of horses for courses. Each client will maybe have slightly different requirements and slightly different environments. So a pump operating in, say, you know, operating the heating of a hotel, for example, or a stadium or something like that, is totally different than a pump that's out in the middle of a chemical site, which is being bombarded with all sorts of different elements, you know, because it's outside in the rain and may get things spilt on it or anything. You know, so the exact same pump may actually need different types of monitoring depending on the location and the situation and how it's being used.
Mm-hmm. So we've been talking a lot around monitoring and stuff, but if we want to work out what the cost benefits and the implications of using it for our site is, I mean, where should we start? Is there a way of assessing what we've got and where this would work for us?
Yeah, so the common approach that we tend to take with lots of brand new clients is, first of all, you know, we try and establish whether there's an asset list. So a lot of places may have an asset list. They may have a system with all of their assets in, you know, if we're lucky. But quite a lot will have asset lists maybe on spreadsheets, or maybe in, you know, or just paper copies of a lot of assets, you know, all the different assets and the manuals and everything. But ultimately, what we need to first of all get is a list of the assets. So, you know, all of the assets that we're interested in, or that the client's interested in knowing about and monitoring, okay? So that asset list, what we then do is what's called a SPOF analysis, single point of failure analysis. Okay. So that's looking at, if it's a production line, it's looking at key assets within that production line, which if they fail, will have a knock-on effect to lots of other assets. Or it's an asset that if it stops a number of processes from working. So it's a single point of failure. And then we look at whether there's ways of mitigating that, i.e. do you have a standby asset in parallel with that that you can just automatically switch over to? Or do you have spares located very, you know, locally to the asset so that you can quickly hot swap an asset in and out in order to mitigate that, okay? And then you look at the failure mode analysis, the FMA for the asset, to see all the different types of failure that an asset would normally have. So a pump, it may jam, it may just stop working, it may leak. You know, there's all sorts of failure modes that can happen. And then we work out then what's the best sort of monitoring for that particular asset. And typically, for a lot of rotating equipment, it's vibration is the key monitoring. So you've got just normal vibration where you're looking at how much vibration there is. And you've also got something called spectral analysis, which looks at three different planes of vibration. And the spectral analysis gives you much better data, which you can actually use to determine what is actually going wrong with the asset. Not just that something's going wrong, what in particular it is that's going wrong. So there's vibration and there's monitoring the power, motor current analysis, all of these sorts of things that you can do. And then all of that data, once you get that and you start, you pick your critical assets first. And then it's like peeling an onion. You start off with your critical assets, you take that layer off, and then you look at the next set of assets and you say, do we want to monitor those? You know, what's the danger in not monitoring that? You know, what would happen? What's the knock-on effect if there's a failure? And at a certain point, you get to your analysis where you're finding assets that if they fail, it doesn't necessarily matter. As long as they get replaced at some point, then it's not a critical asset for the uptime or the production line or the, you know, the uptime of the process. So at that point, you then stop the monitoring, but you just keep details of all of the assets in your asset register. And you may then just do regular surveys to see how those assets are performing and whether there's any degradation of those assets. But all of that data then, once you've got that data, you can then start looking at added benefits, like looking at your asset replacement strategy. So how long have we had these assets? What is the shelf life of these assets? Are we running them to failure? You know, because a lot of organizations will run assets to failure. So they just keep going and going and going beyond the warranty, beyond the manufacturer's recommended, and then know that they have to replace it at the end. Or do you have a more proactive look and you say, next year, we've identified these assets that we're going to replace, and the year after we've identified these, and the year after we've identified these, and so on. So you've got a continuous asset replacement. And the monitoring of these assets can feed into that, because something that you were going to replace 3 years ago that's actually started raising alarms and started to show degradation, you may want to move it forward in your asset replacement strategy. And you may then want something else which has been running quite fine that was going to be replaced next year. You may extend the life of it. So it gives you all of that. And it also then feeds into, as I said earlier, your scheduled maintenance. So your maintenance windows where you shut the production line down and do your maintenance, you can better target which assets you're going to maintain within those maintenance windows. And it may give you the opportunity to have shorter maintenance windows or better targeted maintenance windows for all of those assets. And finally, collecting all of this data over time, it gives you an asset history at a glance. So you can see everything that's actually happened to an asset, you know, from when it was initially, as we say, born, you know, so the asset was first put in place, all of the maintenance that's happened on it, any alarms that have happened to it, any anomalies that have been, all the way through to it when it gets replaced and it gets retired. So you've got that complete asset history at a glance. And from a return on investment point of view, it depends how critical, you know, the uptime is and how much lost revenue there is if there's downtime on your production line. It depends how much you're paying for your facilities management, whether you do it in-house, or whether you get a facilities management company in to look after your assets, because it gives you the opportunity to renegotiate your facilities management contract. And it could be done on a win-win situation. So instead of a facilities management company putting 100 people in to look after your assets, and they're constantly reviewing and monitoring and checking those assets, the facilities management company may only need to put 25 people in. So as a client, you can pay less for your FM, but the FM company, their model tends to be bums on seats or boots on the ground, so to speak. So if you get a clever negotiation of that contract, the client could pay for 50 people. The FM company only needs to put 25 people in instead of the FM company putting 100 people in, for example. So you can find cost savings on that side as well. But typically, there's reputational issues as well. So if you have failures in your production line, and that means that you deliver your goods to clients late, or you don't fulfill orders in time, then there's a reputational issue as well. So you've got that continuity and that basis with your clients as well. So there's a number of different factors where you can get that return on investment. But that's one of the things that we help you to identify and look at when we look at doing this. Because at the end of the day, you don't just put condition monitoring in just for the sake of saying, oh, we're monitoring our assets. There's got to be some benefit to the end client as a result.
Yeah. No, I get you there. And it is going to be nuanced. And I mean, as a generalization, it's going to be similar between clients, but for their specific cost return and cost benefit, it's going to be related to them and the failure rates they're seeing in particular lines and the value of the parts that they're putting through. So yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Yeah, thanks for running through that.
Yeah, and it depends on what their strategy is. Like I said, a lot of clients will run to failure, you know, so they're expecting things to fail and they're expecting to replace them. Others want to sweat their assets. And especially at the moment, you know, in a post-COVID world where people have maybe lost a lot of money or lost a lot of revenue from lost production, with people being on lockdowns and various other things, you may want to try and get the most value out of the assets that you've got rather than buying new assets. So monitoring of those assets allows you to get the most use out of those assets as well.
No, that's great. We've been through that piece, and before I give you some fun end questions, if you've got any sort of case studies, just to put this back into sort of a real world practice, give us some example of where you've been monitoring this.
Yeah. So monitoring pumps for Univar Chemicals. So we're monitoring the pumps, and they have a facility where they're bulk chemicals. So they have tankers coming onto site, connecting into pumps and filling up their tankers, and they operate on a just-in-time system. So if some of the pumps started failing, they would have a huge row of trucks lining up outside the facility, you know, waiting to be filled. And they then have a problem with the people that they're supplying. You know, a lot of that is just in time. And it's also in a very harsh environment. There's lots of very caustic chemicals around. So it's the sort of thing that is very difficult if there is an issue to actually get on site and fix, because you've got to fill in a lot of paperwork just to get on the site. So that's one example, you know, where we're monitoring. Another one, a good one, we were monitoring data centers. A number of years ago, we had an issue where we were monitoring the air conditioning units, and there was an issue with a fan, and the devices picked up a little pinging noise that was pinging on the fan. And the engineer went out and they couldn't actually hear it, and their listening device that they had couldn't actually pick it up, but our sensors did pick it up. So they acknowledged the alarm, went away, the alarm kept going on, they kept acknowledging the alarm, and then eventually the fan got stuck and it caused the meltdown of the entire rack that was on. So there's things like this that using the technology can often actually pick up things that an engineer wouldn't necessarily pick up on with the devices, because they're going and checking a number of devices. So that was another example of, you know, where the technology actually found something that they didn't find. And not surprisingly, after that we'd put these units on a trial basis. After that, we got an order.
I totally imagine that if you can prove these out, and one would sense, because we've talked to other companies that work in, not with these type of asset tracking, but other pieces of sort of monitoring, maybe for OEE, for parts through a process and things, that it can be worthwhile setting up one line or one type of sensor or one asset class and monitoring that for a period of time to just prove it through and understand how you are responding to those alerts and things, who needs to be notified, and just tweaking those levels to make sure that, yeah, you're getting the right stuff through and not false positives or anything else.
Yeah. So, and that's typically what we do is, you know, we explain what we do to a potential client, and then quite often they'll say, well, okay, we've got a few pumps over there. Could you monitor them for a couple of months and then just show us what you can do? So we can take just a little subset and we can put some sensors on, we can monitor it, we can go back and show them. And then like in the example of the bank, when we found a problem and identified it and they didn't actually realize that it was a problem, then it actually helps with the whole process. So that's typically what we do. When somebody gets in touch with us and they're interested in a trial, we can do that trial for them and put the sensors in, and then they can see the benefit of it straight away.
I think that's great. I mean, especially because it's not requiring more people to be on site with using something like this. And especially when we're having times where we're uncertain, we might end up getting another lockdown or different other world events. Or like you're saying, when they're either sensitive or secure sites that the equipment is on, not having to be on site all the time or in order to run sort of daily or weekly maintenance inspections is at least going to help you balance some of that out, but while still maintaining the high quality of uptime and throughput.
Yeah, well, exactly. With like COVID restrictions that we've had, and who knows whether we'll get any more in the future. I hope not, but you never know. And things like social distancing, you can't have a warehouse full of engineers wandering around all the time. You may have to be socially distancing or doing something else. So again, remote monitoring helps with that, because you're only going in when there's a problem, and you're only going in at a particular targeted asset as well. As long as you've got the monitoring right and you've got your right metrics and your right KPIs, then you should be able to rely on the technology to then alert you to the problems, rather than looking in general all the time. And then you can't see the wood for the trees, because if you're trying to look after 3,000 pumps in a huge factory or something, you're never going to get round all of them all the time anyway.
Oh, no, that's great. I think that's been a good sort of a guide through working with a service like this. I was wondering whether you have a book or a favourite tool that you've been working with recently that you could share with the listeners, just to add a personal touch.
A book or a personal tool. I've just bought myself a new cordless drill that I've been using, and I'm busy fixing all the things in the house that I didn't want to bother doing because my previous cordless drill had given up the ghost and I couldn't be bothered to face it. So that's a little tool that I've bought. As far as books are concerned, I've stacked up a load of books on my Kindle ready for when I go on holiday, because I tend to read a lot when I go away on holiday, and that's my downtime to actually stop me from actually trying to think too much about work whilst I'm away. So I've got a number of books stacked up on my Kindle ready for summer. Hopefully we get a summer this year and able to go away.
Indeed, indeed. I think all deserve a good few summer holidays. I think we've appreciated more what actually having a holiday is in the last couple of years.
Yeah. Well, I haven't had a summer holiday now for nearly 3 years.
And our fun little superhero question for the end. You can choose either put one of your prospective clients in the superhero costume or yourself, and you're allowed to pick up one or two things to come out on top if you've been backed into a corner by some force out of your control. Or so what sort of things might you grab? They can be a literal or a physical thing. How you like?
Oh, right. that's a tough one.
You can have a minute.
Just give me a second to think about that. Right, do you want to ask the question again?
Yeah, no worries. So we like to ask this little fun question at the end. You can either put yourself or one of your clients in the superhero costume as to, if you've been backed into a corner, you've got to tackle this issue, what one or two things that would come to hand, they could be imaginary or they can be physical, would you come out on top?
I'd love an invisibility cloak. I could then go and check when some of our clients are complaining that, you know, assets are failing and you've not identified this, you've not identified that. We could actually go and have a look around and see ourselves and see what's going on.
Cool. So yeah, some things can be false positives or some things can be a matter of reading. So
Yeah, exactly.
That's all good. Thank you very much for joining us for the interview today. If people wanted to get in touch with you, I mean, what would mark someone out as being there in the right proposition to come and talk to you, and how would they get in touch?
Well, anybody that has moving equipment or, you know, assets that if they fail causes them an issue should be getting in touch with us. I'm sure that we'd be able to help. We've got a lot of information on our website, assethandling.com. There's lots of information on there. I'm sure you can email me directly, StephenHarrison@assethandling.com. And I'm sure, Tristan, you'll put the details with the podcast so anybody can get in touch with me in that way. And, you know, we've got a team of people here that I can direct you to the right person. But, you know, first of all, get in touch through the website or pick up the phone even to us. All the details are on there.
That's great. It's been super talking to you, and I love your passion for the topic and keeping people up and running. So, yeah, thanks again.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for joining us again on the Cliff Notes podcast today. We've enjoyed talking with Stephen and learning more about this area. If you want to get in touch with myself or the guests, we'll put all the details on cliffnotespodcast.com, or you can contact us directly on Twitter @CliffNotesPod, or find myself or business on LinkedIn. Same with Stephen. So catch up with us again, and look forward to speaking to you soon. Bye-bye now.